From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. Today I'm going to discuss three articles that were published this past week that I think are very relevant to our practice. One is a cost-effectiveness analysis from the United Kingdom looking at whether we should be screening women for abdominal aortic aneurysms. Another is a very interesting article that was published in JACC looking at coronary microvascular dysfunction and cardiovascular risk in obese patients. And the third article is an update of the EXCEL trial, which looked at the effectiveness of a coronary stent, drug-eluting stent, versus bypass surgery for unprotected left main revascularization. This particular update includes data looking at patients in the trial who had renal dysfunction. So let's start with AAA in women. This article published in Lancet created a decision model to try to predict whether screening women for AAAs was cost-effective. It was a rigorously performed model which looked at quality-adjusted life years and incremental cost-effectiveness of the notion of inviting women to be screened for AAA. They looked at specific parameters from sources in the literature, including the National Registry from the United Kingdom, administrative databases, major trials, and the United Kingdom National Health Service reference costs. So they looked at several outcomes, including, obviously, the diagnosis of AAA, number of lives perhaps saved, but also secondary outcomes like overdiagnosis, that is, detecting an aneurysm that would never harm an individual, and the number of women who might have been overtreated with repair for aneurysms that were not perhaps large enough for a predefined endpoint. So the results show that if you look at screening of women, which is currently offered for men, age 65, looking to repair if one finds an aneurysm greater than 5.5 centimeters in diameter, the cost-effectiveness ratio would have been 30,000 pounds per quality-adjusted life year gained. And more notably, I guess, you would have to screen 3,900 women to prevent one AAA-related death. If they modified it and said, well, what about screening at 70 years of age and repairing at 5, which some people favor because there is some data to suggest that women with aneurysms are more likely to rupture at a smaller size, then the cost-effectiveness ratio was 23,000 pounds. One would screen 1,800 women to prevent one AAA-related death. So certainly this decision model is, I guess, sobering in terms of whether or not screening women for AAA is cost-effective. I think in terms of broad screening, the recommendations currently do not suggest that we do that. Certainly for women who have a family history of aortic disease and or especially if they smoke and or especially if they have a body habitus that makes physical examination tenuous, then certainly there are exceptions where I think one could argue that screening would be appropriate. But in terms of a population strategy, I think this study is very enlightening. I'm going to move now to a very interesting paper published this week in JACC. The title of the article, Coronary Microvascular Dysfunction and Cardiovascular Risk in Obese Patients. And this article really looks at what is the relationship between obesity and coronary microvascular dysfunction and adverse outcomes. Wonderful study. These are patients who were referred for cardiac stress testing using PET. There were 827 individuals, and they were followed for over 5 years. And they looked for endpoints including death, hospitalization for MI or heart failure. And they used Cox proportional hazards models to examine the associations between covariates and events, particularly thinking about BMI and coronary flow reserve. The results were very interesting. It showed an independent J-shaped relationship between obesity and coronary flow reserve, so that obese patients, their coronary flow reserve decreased linearly with increasing BMI. In adjusted analysis, coronary flow reserve, but not BMI, remained independently associated with events. Very interesting. The hazard ratio, about 2. So obese patients with abnormal coronary flow reserves had twice the risk of adverse outcomes. And when they added coronary flow reserve, in addition to BMI and other risk factors, the model predicting risk was better. That is, coronary flow reserve clearly had a discriminatory power in these patients. And if one looked at just the obese patients who had impaired coronary flow reserve compared to those who didn't, the risk of events was doubled, 5.7% versus 2.6%. So the authors concluded, I think correctly, that coronary microvascular dysfunction was independently associated with BMI and outcomes, bad outcomes, and was a better discriminator of risk than BMI and traditional risk factors. So I think this sets the stage for kind of the notion of what are we doing with the sophisticated nuclear imaging and perfusion imaging that we have. And I think we're on the verge of a new frontier. And that is the ability to identify patients at risk for these microvascular type events that we see all the time. And these are far more common in women and certainly more common in people who have obesity. We need certainly validation studies. And then we need a trial to decide, okay, can we show that therapy, once we identify abnormalities of coronary flow reserve in these patients, does therapy have a big impact? So that is the next step for us. And the last paper I want to talk about is an update of the EXCEL trial. This was a very important trial that was presented in October of 17, and I want to just review it briefly for you. This looked at PCI with second-generation drug-eluting stents versus CABG, three-year outcomes, treating patients with unprotected left main lesions. Patients were randomized 1-to-1, almost 1,000 patients in each arm. Duration of follow-up 3 years, mean age 66, 23% were women. To get in, you had to have unprotected left main disease greater than or equal to 70%, or 50-70 with either non-invasive evidence of ischemia or small intravascular luminary less than 6 millimeters squared, or FFR less than 0.8. Importantly, these patients had syntax scores less than 32, which means in general they had less diffuse disease than perhaps others with left main disease. 29% were diabetics. Angina was stable in 53%. 15% had had a recent MI, unstable angina 24%. And they had good ventricles. The EF was 57%. The lesion was in the distal left main in 81%, which is important. And a good number of patients had additional disease, 31% single vessel, 33% two vessel, and 18% had triple vessel. Average number of stents per patient, 2.4. The CABG group got an average number of conduits of 2.6, and the mammary artery was used essentially every time. And medication use was outstanding, with virtually 100% of patients getting aspirin and statins. The three-year primary endpoint was non-inferior, PCI 15.4% versus 14.7% for CABG. The death rate was 8.2% for PCI, 5.9% for CABG. That p-value was 0.11. The death, stroke, or MI rate at 30 days was higher for CABG, as you might expect, early hazard, 7.9% versus 4.9%. But then after 30 days, the PCI group had much higher endpoint rates, 11.5 versus 7.9. And stent thrombosis, of course, was relatively uncommon, less than 0.5% at 30 days. Quality of life scores, no difference. AFib was more common with CABG, but manageable. Interesting, a sub-analysis looking at patients who had an elevated BNP greater than 100 picograms per ml, which occurred in 40%. There was an interaction. If the BNP was elevated compared to normal, then there was a differential risk comparing PCI versus CABG. The CABG patients did better. 21% events in the PCI group versus 16% in the CABG group. Kidney disease, present in 19%. Of course, these people had had higher rates of endpoints. There were no differences in the rates of three-year composite endpoint of PCI versus CABG in patients who had CKD. This is a very important trial and certainly established, I think, firmly the feasibility of PCI for unprotected left main disease, especially in patients where there are extenuating circumstances to say, you know, this is not a patient that I want to take through coronary bypass surgery. Obviously, these patients had to have coronary anatomy suitable for an interventional approach. And I think the data on the BNP subgroup is interesting, perhaps a group where we need to steer clear of PCI and move toward the CABG arm. So stay tuned, but I think this is an important clinical trial that should inform our practice and certainly has already informed mine. So I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. You can find these articles online or wherever you get your information. And until next week, I hope you have a good one. Thank you.